Hello and welcome to a new isolation episode of the Helium Talk Art Podcast. Things are changing around the world every day now. Rules in Germany get a tiny bit loosened up. Not much, but it's a start. Most small shops can open again. Galleries, though, are explicitly exempt from this, but it seems that this is just another glitch in the matrix, because we have been thrown into the mix with museums and large exhibition halls. So most people I know running a gallery will be open again, for very few visitors daily, which is the standard in the gallery business anyway. At Helium Cowboy, we finally decided on a date for our upcoming exhibition that Melvin curates under the title Behind Closed Doors. This show is specifically planned to meet the demands of the weird and crazy times we live in today. We will open Thursday, April 30 from 10 in the morning till 8 in the evening and will give access to a small number of people at the same time in the gallery space. You can book this with us at heliumcowboy.com/bcd. We will also stream tours throughout the day. All that info will also be on our website. We have brand new work, a lot of it created over the past weeks in isolation, so to say, by the following artists: John Bergemann, Victor Castillo, Rune Christensen, Alex Diamond, Boris Hoppeck, Jordi Kerwick, Barbara Lüde, Rachel McCulley, Math 12, Mittenimwald, Jabo Monk, Jens Rausch, Rasmus Rinhag, David Schillinglaw, Winnie Trong, John Todd, and Fabian Wolf. Okay, back to the podcast. With this series of special editions of the Helium Talk, I'm trying to find out how the art community around the world is doing. So I'm checking in with artists, gallerists, collectors, journalists, and so on to hear how they are dealing with being locked down and what their ideas are to make the best of this. For this show, I spoke with David Schillinglaw, who was on my regular podcast last year, visiting me in person in my studio in Hamburg. Here we go. Two people who love to talk. Please enjoy an hour of David and Jörg. Where do I find you right now? Where are you?
You find me in my living room because I'm staying at home. I live in Margate, which is just east of London, directly east, and it's by the seaside. It's beautiful. Okay. And I'm in my home where I live with my partner Lily and our baby, and we're very, very lucky because we have a nice little house with a little garden and on a very quiet neighborhood, and it's very sweet, like a British Twin Peaks.
All right. Twin Peaks ends badly, though. You know that, right?
I don't know. I'm watching it now. Wanted to watch it. No, don't spoil it, mate. I'm on season two. But I heard they did a third season.
Yeah, they did one, but I tried to watch it, but I somehow couldn't.
Well, I'm obsessed with it now. I do it every night. I watch an episode. It's become part of my routine.
So you have special routines now?
Yes.
Compared to before?
Yes, definitely. I'd say that the main routine is set by my baby because she sets the agenda. It's all about her. She's the center of our universe. So that's new. She's 6 months old. So I'd say my routine has changed dramatically in 6 months. Since the quarantine, yeah, there's a different kind of routine going on, usually inspired by what we're eating. I'm obsessed with no waste. So yeah. I'm constantly playing chess with food. Like, if I cook this today, then I can make that tomorrow. And I'm just, I'm a bit obsessed with food anyway. But now the idea of something running out or something being moldy or going bad, can't have it. So my routine is about baby hygiene, food, trying to work actually from home, which is more difficult than I used to think it was.
You don't have a studio?
I do, but
at home, I mean.
Well, that's where I'm now. I mean, my studio at home is just a wall and a desk. It's my living room. It's very comfortable. It's almost too comfortable because I can't really paint here. My studio is very messy. There's no sofa. It's a wooden floorboarded room that I can throw paint around in. And I could still go there. I've been there a couple of times to pick things up and water my plants, but I don't feel right going and working there if I don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a different kind of workspace at home. I'm limited to doing smaller, more controlled more paper drawings rather than big canvases.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably what changes in a lot of artists' studios right now or at home, that you kind of change the way you, not necessarily the way you work, but what you work on, right?
Yeah, it's interesting when the environment sort of dictates the materials. Like if you're using spray paint, for example, I wouldn't use that.
Mm-hmm. Or no,
there's a certain action when I make paintings. I stand up to do it, or I put them on the floor. There's a definite sort of physical action, and I can't do that at home. So it's weird. It's a different thing, and it's actually quite a good discipline for me. I'm used to it as well, because when I travel or when I'm in someone else's home making art, like I can make work with just a pencil and a bit of paper, but I am missing the other bit. It's like I'm on first or second gear and I want to get to fifth gear, but I can't.
Yeah,
but that will happen. I'm not worried about it. I did have an exhibition. I might still have the exhibition. It's in September, so okay. We'll see.
Yeah, I think September is probably, you know, sort of pretty safe to have a show again. Just hold on, Maxime is asking me some things here right now, and I have no idea. Ich weiß es nicht. Okay, sorry. This is also a Corona podcast, Helium Talk with interference from kids.
That's all right.
Yeah, that's all right. You want to say hi, Maxime? Say hi.
Hi, Maxime. Hi. You're much bigger than when I met you last.
Yeah, he grows fast. But he's looking for something and he can't find it, and I don't know where it is. So back to this one. Yeah, everything is kind of weird right now, you know, so including the podcasting, asking the family to be a bit quiet, but, you know, it's just there's background noises now. You've been to my studio. It was kind of a nice atmosphere there, but no interferences. But I think that working... You know, sort of, I think a lot of artists that I'm speaking with, they're working on small format, or some of them have the luxury of still going to the studio or have the studio at home, and basically not much is changing except for direct contact and the exhibitions. But I think September, it's also the question. I mean, the thing with galleries is we have an average of 2 to 10 visitors a day at a gallery.
That's it.
Everywhere
it's
around
a
the world.
Show, but just not maybe have the opening with 50 people drinking free beer. Maybe actually an exhibition's better with just two people, like one in, one out. And how many people do you need in an exhibition space?
I don't know, but that's the thing that Mevin and I are planning for the opening of the show that you're also part of, that we're going to announce the opening day as soon as we know how we can actually realize that. Our hope is that we can have like 3 or 4 people at the same time in the gallery. So everybody subscribes basically and makes an appointment when to come, so we have like 3 or 4 people in the gallery at the same time, but the opening starts like at 9 in the morning and ends at 9 in the evening.
Yeah.
So a very long day for us, but equal amount of people can come.
Oh, but it's nice because maybe people feel they've got a special time that's just for them, it's allocated, and maybe they get a better... It makes you question why people go to exhibitions, doesn't it? Because I definitely go to exhibition openings to get free drink and to see my friends. And sometimes I've been to exhibitions where you can't even see the art because it's so busy. You're like, I'll come back when there's no one here and see the art. But for now, let's drink as many bottles of beer as possible in 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably for a lot of people the reason to go to an opening.
Yeah. It could be worse. Like, I was thinking the other day, like, music concerts are going to be really difficult. Because imagine, like, 1,000 or even 10,000 people. Oh, I'm glad I'm not a musician or a stand-up comedian, because... You're in a dark room where people are drunk, so they don't care as much. And, oh, man, there's lots of different industries that I think are going to be really different after this. I wonder how music festivals are going to be.
Well, this year in Germany, everything's cancelled until the end of August regards to festivals or anything. So there's no festival in Germany. But what's next year?
Let's say next year it comes back, like our freedom comes back, our ability to socialise. I wonder if it would still be in the back of people's minds. It's a bit like a terrorist attack. You know, and what's fascinating about this is that it's a different kind of threat. Obviously, it's invisible. It's irrespective of your religion or your geographical place. It's like, I'm going to get you unless you're really careful, which is kind of refreshing. I quite like the fact, not obviously, I'm looking at silver linings, but mm-hmm. I quite like the fact that it can affect anyone, irrespective of your financial situation or your geographical location. So the difference, I'll try and be concise with what I say because I have a tendency to ramble, but what's interesting about this compared to terrorist attacks or mm-hmm. a natural disaster like a tsunami or an earthquake, or let's say someone sets up a bomb in a music venue, right? What happens in those situations is there's a terrible catastrophe and we're all shocked. Everyone is shocked and we all respond with shock and fear, and we write on Facebook, I'm safe, I'm safe. And we even donate money to the people to help relieve the suffering in a tsunami. And then afterwards it calms down and we pick up the pieces and we reflect and go, wow, that's what happened. That's ISIS or that's a tsunami. This mm-hmm. is like that in slow motion. It's like a tsunami over the whole world in slow motion. And in fact, it hasn't even really happened yet. Like, we're not even sure when it will stop. So I think it's really interesting because up until now, we're used to catastrophe. You know, people actually, I think some people quite like catastrophe. Not consciously, maybe, but it gives you meaning. You know, you can, mm-hmm. I sent money to the tsunami survivors, or I believe in this because this person blew up an aeroplane or whatever. So it gives you, conflict can sometimes help you understand what you believe. This makes everyone question reality, actually, reality. You're like, whoa, I can't go to the supermarket. That's deep. That puts everyone in a similar kind of displacement.
Yeah, I think it's one aspect that I've been chatting about with a few people as well. Like in the last episode with the Low Bros, the question came up, or the fact basically came up, that we've been discussing climate change for the past 2 years, and it's gotten really, really intense over the last years, and it was getting awareness, but there was always like, yeah, we would like to change things, but it's very difficult. Mm. And then this happens and it's like, okay, let's stop all cruise ships now, today. Yeah,
an airplane.
So one day, airplanes. You know, just like this, stop traffic, and everybody's still kind of surviving. So there is kind of radical change is possible. That's one thing that will come out of it. And it's probably going to be taken. Now I probably start to ramble, but it's probably taken by different political interests into their perspective. So some people will, you know, so right wing people will use this, left wing people will use this. Yeah. So we're going to have big political discussions that are already starting, but now the focus is still on so many other things, But basically what it shows that, you know, sort of if our climate, if our nature is so fucked up, we could actually make drastic changes. Yeah.
And we would never have made those changes voluntarily. No one would ever say, let's stop flying airplanes for three months and see what happens. That's mad, because we've been forced to check ourselves, stay still, don't. You know, there's so many future consequences. Like, I wonder how many people in 3 months' time are going to be like, why am I going back to work? I can work from home. I don't need to go to an office. I don't need to commute 1 hour to sit in a big office. And all the companies that rent the huge offices in London that are now empty, and all the people are still working at home, they're going to be like, whoa, maybe we can turn these offices into, I don't know, hospitals. Like, there's the agenda. One of the things I love about this situation is that nurses and doctors are being referred to as the front line. So nurses and doctors are replacing soldiers. I mean, I'm sure the soldiers are still going to be needed to keep peace, ironically. Mm-hmm. But also scientists and even philosophers are becoming more relevant than politicians. I mean, politicians are like, what are you talking about? You're kind of out of your element. I'm not even going to name any names because I think we all know who the idiot politicians are. But some of them, you're like, wow, this is amazing because now I can see that you are the worst person for any job. And actually, you move out the way, Mr. President, and let the scientist and the doctor, and actually, let's listen to the philosopher because they know about ethics and they know about human behavior and they know about cooperation. And it is actually amazing. It's bringing out people's true colors. I think what's interesting for me is that I've got a six-month-old baby. So I'm thinking, how does this now affect her when she's 20 years old? Will there be repercussions? You know how, like, the Twin Towers, there's still repercussions of that. Like, we still feel the effect of whether it's because of new laws that came in about searching people and arresting people who we think they might be a terrorist. Let's send them to Guantanamo Bay, right? There's certain things that change. I can't think of the word. It's not a law. It's similar to a law where they change the way we deal with problems. I wonder if this is going to have, I wonder if my daughter, right, when she's 20, whether she'll be kissing people hello, goodbye. And my girlfriend's French, right? And the French love to kiss. They kiss everyone. I've never met people and I'm at a wedding and they're kissing me three times. And I wonder if that's just, you're going to reserve kissing and hugging for people you really love or you really trust. And it will be a big symbol. If you hug someone now, it's not just like a drunk hug in the pub. Oh man, I just met you. Yeah, you're great. It would be like, no, I'm going to hug you because it's your birthday and humans need human contact. I miss it. I feel weird. I went to see my friends today to drop them some, I'm growing tomatoes. So I took their kids some tomato plants. And it was weird. The little kid is like 4 years old and he and I usually hug. The dog, I usually pick up the dog and hug that. And I was like, I'm not even touching your dog. I don't want to touch any of you. I love you, but I'm not touching you. And that's weird. That's a very simple change that I think is going to be felt in 20 years' time, maybe. Yeah. Or maybe people will just go back to normal.
Well, I think in certain scenarios, I can see that things will go back to normal very quickly. I think when, and in others, probably not. I think, you know, I think the fact, I mean, I've become a very physical person in that respect too. I wasn't like that when I was very young or when I was young or in my teens, but I came to hug people. I like the embrace. Actually, I think on every single exhibition of Helium Cowboy, the photo coverage on our website, there's one image where I'm hugging someone. I should tell Melvin to pick out all the photos and make a video of it or just an image. So anyway, but I think there will be a lot more respect now. You really, you know, sort of consider this. Like if we meet each other again on a show in, I don't know, a year's time or a couple of months' time, I'm pretty sure we...
I'm definitely not hugging you.
I'm pretty sure we're gonna hug.
I'm staying 3 meters from every human.
Yeah, but...
Forever.
But you're right. You will not, you know, sort of pass out hugs as, you know, so before. But when I'm thinking of the situation, for example, at football, in the football stadium, and that's one of the reasons, of course, I think why they're trying to ban that for a longer time is all my 90-minute friends around me, there are friends of mine there around me, but most of the people around me that I'm hugging and kissing when we win and we score goals are my so-called 90-minute friends. Mm. They are friends we only meet in the stadium. We only meet in the stand. I'm pretty sure we're still going to hug when we win or when we score a very important goal. So I think there will be situations where it's not going to change. But I think things that change is like in a supermarket, you will look more critical at how everything is presented, if people touch stuff, you know, sort of. I think they're discussing that it becomes a rule to wear masks in public.
Yeah.
In Germany and probably in other European countries as well, whereas the Asians would just shrug and say, sure, we're doing it all the time.
You know what's interesting about Asian people wearing masks? I always thought that was so they didn't catch something. But actually, it comes from they don't want to pass something on.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting state of mind. It's actually really conscientious and saying, I've got a cold, I don't want to give it to you, so I'm going to wear a mask. And I'm an idiot Westerner who always looked at it and thought, wow, they're a bit paranoid, aren't they? That they don't want to catch something. And it's the opposite. And you know what's interesting about that? I read somewhere that that comes from, if you go way back in history, the agricultural revolution, the countries in the world that produce rice, they have collective societies because you need lots and lots of people to produce rice. And the psychology that the collectivism creates is caring for everyone. And that, after thousands of years, manifests in, I don't want to give people my cold, because if I give that person my cold, we can't make enough rice. Okay? In our culture, the Western world, we made bread. You don't need lots of people to make bread. You need a couple of people and a lot of flour. So we have an individualistic tendency. We care about ourselves. And so when I look at someone with a mask, I think they're paranoid. But actually, they're not paranoid. They're really nice. So yeah, the mask thing's different. I've got a mask. I was wearing it today. It's weird. I feel like a ninja going into the supermarket. Yeah. It'd be a good time to rob a bank right now, because everyone's wearing a mask. Can I just say something? We were mentioning, right, things going back to normal. And I've heard that a lot recently. And the word normal, it kind of rattles around in my head, because I think there's a lot about the way people were living before this pandemic that wasn't normal. Things we took for granted, like homelessness, right? You walk past people in the street who are homeless, or people not being able to afford food, or refugees washing up on beaches near my house, really. Those things are not normal, and they were never normal. And maybe this reality check, it's like someone is shaking reality. And actually, I wonder if we want to go back to certain ways. So I'll tell you one thing I think will change is the health system. I don't think, because we had an election late last year, and I think if we were to have that election again, I think everyone, whether they voted to stay in Europe or leave, doesn't matter, they would say, number one on the agenda, what are you going to do about the hospitals? We need more doctors, we need more machines, we need more masks and gowns and gloves before you even talk to us about Brexit. Like, what was Brexit? Brexit was like a pantomime from last year that no one even cares about now. And I think across the world, maybe actually, it's some utopic projection that in 20 years' time, imagine there was like a global, I know there's the World Health Organization, but maybe there's like a global network. I'm probably stupid, this probably already exists, but where each country has a uniform understanding of how much equipment they have, the science, so sharing information, like we know this much, you know this much, and almost like a global health network, which protects people from this happening again. Because I'll tell you what, I read some, there's a magazine I read called Adbusters, which is very dystopian. And if you think about it, there's a good chance this could happen again. This happened already with SARS. This happened with Ebola. This is just something that maybe some people have been saying, this is going to happen. Like, what if this happens again in another year? And we spend another, what if it becomes an annual thing where we all spend 3 months inside? Lily's walking behind me. Do you want to say hello?
No, I need a shower.
All right.
There's Lily. Hi. He's not going to record the video. He's recording the sound.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, just the sound.
And you guys do it.
There you go. That was some authentic interruption. He got interrupted by his kid.
Yeah, we got guests on the show tonight.
Today. Lily Mick, shout out. She's amazing.
Yeah, that's true.
So yeah, that was some deep conversation there, I guess. Maybe I'm out of my element. I don't know what I'm talking about, by the way.
Well, I don't know. I think it's of course it's become a little philosophical, but you're right. The term normal does not apply to the situation after this.
Yeah, what is normal?
Yeah. And
for different people, what is normal for a millionaire And what is normal for a homeless person? That's what you've got to ask yourself. You're only as normal as the person standing next to you.
Yeah, not even that probably. But I agree. I think it's. I think when we talk about the masks again, just for a little bit, that is for us. It's not normal for other cultures. It's already part of culture, so that becomes kind of normal. But as you said, the topic of the health system, we have a very good and very solid health system in Germany. Still, people freaking out that might not be enough for the situation. So we're trying to prepare for next time. We are in a situation where we experience restrictions that we're not used to live with, you know. Me personally, I've always been quite on the left side of politics, and when I was younger I was protesting against a lot of things, and now things are happening that where I would actually say hold on, this is not quite right. You know,
it's a bit 1984, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit 1984. And now it's like, weren't
we already there? Maybe we were there already and we didn't feel the pressure because we were free to consume delicious things. You know, there's a great quote that says, the only thing George Orwell did not predict was that we would take the photos ourselves and we would care when no one was looking. So that totalitarianism, that fascism actually, where everyone is controlled, I think we're already kind of there. Some places are more. China have like that face recognition computer. And actually, in this situation, that amount of control can actually help, because you're like, right, you went to this shop, you bought that stuff, we know everything about you, you stay in quarantine. Whereas some parts of the world where people are more free, in inverted commas, they're in chaos now because they're like, we can't keep track of anyone. So there's arguments for saying that control is a good thing and freedom is actually not always that good. And how free were we? You know, I kind of accept that I'm not actually that free. I just enjoy the amount of freedoms I have. And you're right, now we're reminded of it because we're stuck in our home and it's for our benefit to stay home. But I'm not sure my point. I don't think we were that free before.
No, but there are rights that are being, taken away is such a strong word. You know, I still feel pretty free and liberal to walk around and go to the supermarket and go to my studio if I must. So it's not that there's a person with a gun outside. I mean, people try to compare this to totalitarian and fascist regimes. It's still different to live in a state like that, of course. But then again, here, you know, I mean, police is telling people over loudspeakers from the cars to move apart when they're in the park, when they're too close together. This is a very, very freakish situation.
That's wild, isn't it? It is like something out of a dystopian episode of Black Mirror. What I keep thinking about, I get overwhelmed with fictional empathy for, like, I keep thinking about the kids that didn't finish their exams, you know, who are stuck at home with their parents. Like when I was 16, I finished my exams. I went to Amsterdam and I just didn't go home for like 6 months. And my parents were cool with it. Imagine being at home now and and then what about people experiencing domestic abuse? Like people stuck in a tower block. Like I've got a garden. I know people who live in flats where you can't even open the windows for health and safety. And I just can't imagine being stuck in a poisonous relationship with someone where you're suddenly in the house with them all the time. You hated them before this, and now you really hate them. Or maybe you're going to fall in love with them again. I reckon there'll be a lot of babies after this, and there'll be a lot of divorces as well.
But I mean, this topic, the topic of abuse is of course something that is so dangerous right now. And that's, for example, a topic that needs to come on the agenda much more, how to deal with situations like this, because before it was not necessarily party policy to have like family as a main topic, but this is all health, family. How does this work together? I mean, we're in a very good situation because my wife and I, we're together for 29 years. We know each other pretty well. We spend enough time. We also go on our nerves from time to time, which is you know, probably what happens everywhere. But we're pretty used to each other, and we've never, none of us has in this relation suffered domestic abuse of any kind. We love our children, and they grow up in a very, you know, sort of loving and comfortable environment. So we're in a really, really good place. But still, Melvin is out of the house, of course. He's now with his girlfriend in quarantine in Hamburg. We're the three of us, Melvin, 9 years old, my wife and I, we experience daily moments, episodes where you just have to go out of the room, or we're looking at homeschooling. Homeschooling can be terror. You know, it's like we're not teachers. We're not sort of educated to do these things. But there's, you know, so like, and it's kind of working. But just imagine in a family where nobody has the patience like my wife, like Yvonne has to work with Maxime on his homework or his school tasks that he gets, you know, sort of to keep in the loop and to, you know, to continue being a student and not just a kid playing all day. But he picks up different things. So like, I have my studio here in this place, and he just did his first woodcuts, and I'm starting to think, you know, sort of like, should probably be as cool as him when he does that, those, you know. But he's learning new skills, different skills that he would not have learned when he's at school all the time. He's hardly ever in my studio, you know, sort of. I mean, as an artist, I mean, you really experience this with your daughter. I'm pretty sure at some point it crawl up into your mind that when you knew you're going to make you're going to have a beautiful baby, that you thought, oh, in the future she will be painting with us.
Well, I've got a feeling she's going to rebel and become an accountant or a chartered surveyor, you know, or something.
Maybe, but it's something that usually during your days when you live, when your daughter is in not now, but in kindergarten or in school at some point, you'd probably wish that you had more time with her in your studio, and there is no time. And now it's a good time for if you have kids in that age. I think if you have a teenager, it's tough. It's really tough, because the teenager doesn't want to be at home most of the time anyway. I mean, I didn't want to be at home when I was a teenager. It would kill me now.
Yeah, I just didn't go home when I was a teenager. I'd do anything to be out. My baby's only 6 months old, so she's just so selfish. She just doesn't care about anything other than her own sensations. And that's quite easy, actually. As long as she's happy, it's fine. I can't imagine. So how old yours? Nine,
yeah.
That's difficult. That's full on. You've got to keep them entertained, and you've got to keep them bored. And it's interesting. I was listening to something on the radio about talking about parents playing with their kids and how important play is and how important getting bored is, because kids don't get bored because of the internet and because of school. You're kind of like, this thing, that thing, this thing, that. You never have the bits in between. And actually, I'd say being an artist is about playing and being bored, and out the conflict between the two, how to move from one thing to another, and the importance of getting bored. If you're bored, it's like, for me, it's like being in a labyrinth. And when you get bored, it's like you hit a dead end. So you have to go back and you have to find a new route. And as a result, I never really get bored. I just give myself too many options. In fact, I'd say being bored is a luxury. If a child ever says to me, I'm bored, I'm like, wow, lucky you. Enjoy it. Stare at the wall for a couple of hours. Lovely. Yum, yum. Yeah. I think being at home with your family, going back to what you're saying about the tensions, because Lily and I have also had it, you know, we've been inside for a month. I was in Puerto Rico before that month, though. I traveled back to England by the skin of my teeth, man. I got the last flight back from the United States of America. It was crazy. That's a whole other story. If you want to hear about my transatlantic adventure during a global pandemic, that's something else.
You were working there? Or?
No, I was on holiday. I went to stay with some friends, and it booked 6 months ago. And I remember thinking, should I go to Puerto Rico? And like, people were like, no, just go. It's fine. This isn't going to be that bad. And I said to my friends the night before we left, because we stayed at their house in London, I said, should I be really traveling to the Caribbean during a pandemic? And they were like, no, it's fine. Have a good time. And after 1 week, shit started getting heavy, man. Every morning I'd see my phone and the BBC News would come up and go, 37 people died last night. And I'm like, what? Like, are you serious? So luckily, we got the right flight, the same flight that we'd booked. And I'm not joking. I think we got the last United Airlines flight back to London. And we've been in the house since then. I've gone out a few times to the supermarket, to a local, not even supermarket, local shops, which is also a good thing of this situation, that I have local shops that I can support, local fruit and veg, and I don't need to go to the supermarket. And it makes you suddenly realize, that's when a community is a really good thing. When you know the people, I can text the people who are in the shop and say, can you get me this stuff in a box and I'll come and pick it up. I don't want to go to a big supermarket. Anyway, we've been in for a month and Lily has not left the house because she doesn't need to. She and Ziggy are staying at home. I go out and hunt and gather like a caveman. I come down and she hoses me down with antibacterial goo. But in that month, there have definitely been times when we have got on each other's nerves. And it's such a small thing, isn't it? If someone like burns the dinner, or if someone forgets to hang out the washing, or I don't know, there's all sorts of domestic stuff. And this is my answer, right? I've got a mantra. I don't always live by it because I'm as bad as anyone. I can get in a bad mood for no reason. But in my head, I have this phrase, and it is that some days are easier than others, some hours are easier than others, and some minutes are easier than others. And that helps me a lot. When I'm feeling the pressure or when I'm feeling trapped, someone told me that when I was experiencing a lot of grief. So it helped me through a really difficult time. And now when I feel shit because of something I've done or something someone else done, I just think, wow, this is a bad minute, but the next minute's going to be better. But it is really difficult. I'm speaking from an extremely privileged point of view. I have a garden. I have a healthy baby. I have a beautiful wife. I have a fridge with delicious food. I can't really complain, actually. My job, especially, this is normal. I am so used to working for 3 months and not getting paid. That's been normal for me for 15 years. So actually, what's interesting about this situation is that the people who work for your big banks or your supermarkets or whoever, people are going to lose their jobs because the companies are going to fold. And it wasn't illegal immigrants. It was actually a pandemic that made them lose their job. So it's switching things around for people who thought they were safe in a job. Whereas the people like myself, I guess I'm an entrepreneur, someone who works for themselves, or the DIY homegrown gig economy. Actually, I've been practicing this for years. I'm used to it. That's not to say that I'm not freaking out a little bit, because I don't know when my next money's coming from, but I never did. So let's see. I reckon there's going to be a lot of artists. Look, there already are a lot, maybe too many. But now people are starting to think, I can learn guitar or I can draw a picture. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, actually.
I mean, I think it's really beautiful when people start exploring their creativity, and not just everyone should think about making a profession out of it. I mean, that already is the case, and we both know there are a lot of professional artists and musicians out there who should probably decide differently. But I mean, that's I think we're in a comfortable situation as artists that we, you know, so as an artist, you're not, I mean, not necessarily planning on getting money every 3 months, but everything is going to have an impact. It's going to have an impact if the small galleries will close, will have to close because they have, you know, to pay rent and still run contracts, pay certain contracts and certain stuff. I mean, Melvin and I, we're putting together an exhibition that's basically just costing us money right now.
Yeah.
You know, but if we don't invest now, if we don't do these things now, then geez, I mean, we're basically closing shop before actually the summer break when we're closing shop anyway, and then it's easily 5 months before you have the next exhibition where you can actually, you know, sort of start to make money again. But I mean, you know, sort of small, I mean, everybody in gastronomy is more or less fucked right now.
Oh, yeah, the restaurant industry. Terrible
restaurants. I mean, you've experienced the nice beers of my friend Ollie. I mean, they're fighting, you know, for their life right now with a small craft brewery. And so, I mean, we're basically, but I mean, as an artist, it's you know, sort of if the backbone is breaking away, then you will be still making no money in 9 months because nobody's going to buy art because people losing their job and not being able to buy art, you know, sort of for a foreseeable time. But I just had a very interesting meeting and safe distance, of course, with my Danish gallerist, Rasmus from Galerie Wolfs. And he was at my studio picking up new work for an exhibition that he's going to open virtually next week in Denmark. So another exhibition without people, actually, and or many people at the opening, at least. And he's basically saying that in Denmark right now, a lot of people are in their summer houses, and the wealthy people there are kind of bored, and they're buying artwork right now. His business is currently going quite strong, at least for now, because, you know, there's also another aspect. People have now time to, you know, sort of look more into artworks. And also, I think the online aspect of the whole art business, I mean, I heavily disagreed with Jonathan Levine in the podcast we did about this topic, but I think in America, it's already maybe a little bit more further ahead. But I know that in Europe, at least online sales of galleries, it's a minor part. And maybe the acceptance of buying art online, you know, might get bigger because people who weren't digital before are now, you know, sort of becoming more digital and understanding that it's possible. I mean, there's people who've ordered the first time online, and, you know, actually on this note, I made a very interesting experiment at the beginning of the year. I tried to avoid ordering anything through Amazon, and I managed to do so basically until this crisis hit because I didn't figure out I didn't need Amazon at all. So it's possible. And now I'm kind of, you know, sort of stuck with eventually from time to time having to order there again, but basically just as on a side note, it can change the buying behavior in the arts industry. That's, you know, at least what I'm hoping for.
I sold some art this week, and it was very weird because there was a friend of mine that I haven't seen for 5 years in America, and he asked me if I had any prints, and I said yeah, but I don't know. I hadn't posted anything for a while. I was like, yeah, I can send you some prints. But I only had a few different screen prints. And he said, oh, no, I'm looking for something more like this. I said, look, I can send you the high-res images. And he's agreed to print them. Now, obviously, that brings into all sorts of questions about the authenticity because they're not signed. But he wanted a bunch of artwork on his walls. And he paid to have the high resolution images that he can print. And I kind of joked and said, well, hopefully before too long I can come to America, and when I do, I'll come and sign them. They'll cost you more when they're signed, but, you know. But it is interesting how people, the role of art in this, the role of art in people's daily life. I did a video yesterday for my local museum. They wanted me to do a workshop or an artist talk, and it was kind of appealing to the interest of the people stuck at home, because art in broad terms is something that all of us need, you know, whether that's music or making a cake. I would say that art, a definition of art that I lean on sometimes, is art is anything you don't need. Art is a high heel shoe or a cream cake. It maybe that's artisan or an artifact, but there's something we need in the things that we don't need, you know, because we need food and water, but no one needs cream cakes. But I'll tell you what, life without cream cakes is not as delicious, is it? Now, there's a writer that I am obsessed with called Yuval Noah Harari. I've got a feeling I spoke about it on your last podcast. He wrote a series of books. One, the most famous, is called Sapiens. And then he wrote Homo Deus, which means human God. And then he wrote 21 Lessons for the 21st Century. All three of those books are essential. And he predicts that in the future, can you hear that noise, by the way? Because they're taking my scaffolding down. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
is that really, okay. really annoying? They're supposed to do that this morning. I'm so angry. So he predicts, Yuval Noah Harari predicts that in the future, we are all artists. And I see that happening more and more. I see it with social media, where more people are promoting themselves as artists. Not only are they making art, but I see every day something comes up and it says sponsored. So that's where someone says, I'm an artist. I'm going to pay money to show you that I'm an artist, which is a weird commodity because it's like, no, you're paying money to show me your art. That's weird. I would never do that. But what's interesting about it is that AI and technology and the internet and all these things that are making our lives faster and easier, they can't make art. Some people would argue that maybe AI could make a song or could even paint a picture if you programmed it to. But I don't think so. I think art is a very human thing that usually comes by the accidental collision of two things, colors, shapes, objects, whatever. The other thing he says that humans can't, that machines can't do is care. So the other thing he predicts is that the one industry that will be in abundance is care work, looking after old people and sick people. Computers can't lift up old people. It just can't happen. You need compassion and empathy and real love for that. So maybe in the future, there's two classes or there's two types of people. You've got the artists and the carers, because they're the thing, because everything else can be automated and mechanized. Supermarkets, you don't need people in supermarkets. There's an Amazon supermarket in America. There's no one in there. You go in, it opens with an app on your phone. You put stuff in your bag and there's laser beam cameras that see exactly what you're doing. You walk out the shop, it charges it to your phone. The only thing that you can't buy is alcohol. You need someone there to see your ID.
Okay.
It's a crazy time. And I think this is a, if you look at what's happening now with the global pandemic, it's almost an experiment. No one work, or obviously lots of people are working. And my heart goes out to the people who are collecting my bins, growing vegetables, the people who are still in the field growing vegetables, cleaning the streets. Like there's people cleaning the streets. So my heart goes out to people, but I'm talking about all the people I know, like you and I, who aren't driving to work. And I do wonder if this is like one step further towards a future where maybe people don't need to work as much, or definitely not in the same way. People can communicate differently. Look at the way we're chatting now. This is futuristic if you were to go back 10 years. So where are we going to be in another 10 years? I don't know. I would say Yuval Noah Harari, check him out, man. That right. guy is he's a sage.
Yeah. I think, you know, so I think this is going to be probably the most philosophical of the podcast episodes I've done.
I hope so. And also, there's an artist called, what's his name? He's German. And he has long black hair and he wears an Adidas tracksuit.
Yeah, Jonathan Mieser.
Yes, I love this guy, but he's crazy in a good way. And he also says that if everybody makes art, then art disappears. That's an interesting idea. And I see that, you know, access equals excess. There is such a thing as too much art and too much anything. It's like when you're looking on Netflix and there's too many things to look at and you spend an hour looking for something and then you're tired, you go to bed. And I wonder if maybe the great artists, these sort of mythological artists like Picasso, right? Maybe one of the reasons that they're revered and held up is because there weren't many people doing it. And you needed a writer to write about it. You needed a photographer. I mean, the books about art were all in black and white. People didn't even have color. So it was really special to go and see a picture in the flesh. Now, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I can take a picture of nothing, my shoe, and someone in Japan likes it. It's nothing. Yeah. It's nothing. And it actually puts me off. Sometimes I'm like, no, I'm not going to share any of this. And then other times I'm like, no, but this can inspire people, or this is sharing. And so I'm torn. I sit on the fence with social media because most of the things I do are offline. They're analog, drawn, painted things. And there's this process of documentation and sharing that I actually think I'm not really sure it does the work justice.
Well, I don't know. It's I definitely spend more time thinking about social media than doing it. Yeah. And I'm doing okay because I kind of have to have the business to run. I think if I would only be an artist, I would do even a lot less. But just as a comparison, the time that I, for example, spent on documenting my work, like with the real camera, taking pictures of the work, also of the process, I think a tiny fraction of that ends up on the internet in the end. Mm. Most of it is for, well, of course, for the online, you know, sort of for the galleries, for my documentation, for potential books I'm doing. But I'm always thinking about, is this something that I need to post? And I think, what does it do? How does it reach people? I sit here and sit in my farmhouse up in the countryside. I have a big campfire. I have a can of beer in my hand. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm taking a picture of the fire and I'm just thinking, what? Why? And then maybe later when I'm back in the house, I post the photo of the fire. Because I think that could be a moment that I might be sharing with people, but I'm sharing so little. But still people, when I meet people in the real world, they say, oh, yeah, your house and your tractor and everything. I know, you know, it's beautiful up there. I've never taken a picture of I've never posted a picture of the house itself anywhere on the internet. Nowhere. But people have the feeling they know how it is up here. And so I kind of give them a good feeling. And it's right, you know, so that they feel that way. So I think that's enough what I'm doing. So yeah. I'm always trying to balance about these things. And it's sometimes driving me nuts that I'm actually sitting there thinking about it. And I think some people just post it, just do it. Some people have like 50,000 stories in their storyline, dang, 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 one thing after the other. And maybe I think they definitely have more followers than I know. Maybe that's also something where people think about right now, that things are changing because we're creating a ton of digital content more. I think we're producing probably 50% more digital noise right now than we've done, you know, before. And that's also something where we have to think about. And because I'm not getting the information and the stuff that I want from the internet right now unless I specifically look for it. Yeah. If I want to see what you're up to, it's not me scrolling down my Instagram feed until I find something by David Schillinglong. You know, and I follow I follow Lily, but I never see anything of her because probably I haven't liked it enough or she's not posting enough.
She actually holds back a lot. I quite like how little she's very specific about what she puts on. I'm a little more carefree with it.
Yeah, we have to kind of find new ways of dealing with that as well.
Interesting things that I like and dislike about the internet is that it is immediate. And yet it's disposable. So the immediacy is amazing. I'm the most impatient person in the world. So for me to take a picture and share it and see a response, it's almost like a conversation happening in real time, but it's disposable. So how often when you go on Instagram or Facebook, do you even look past the first 9 pictures? You're really only looking at the top level or the most recent things. It's chronological, really. And even my own stuff, I don't flick down and down and down and look at something 2 years ago. So there is this tendency to keep up to date or to, you know what, I noticed some people, when they reach a certain level of success, they delete everything and then they just put up like 6 pictures, their best works. Oh. Have you noticed that?
Maurizio Catalan, I think he has only one picture.
He only ever did one picture and he would replace it and he stopped using Instagram. He left. Okay. He said, I'm spending too much time doing this. Enjoy the internet. I'm going to sit on a beach with a beautiful model, probably.
Yeah, but I think if you have the luxury, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, for me, if, personally, I think if I, as I said, if I'd only be an artist, I probably use it a lot less.
Mm. I use Instagram like a sketchbook. I do it for me. I don't put it up. I think other people are going to see it, but I don't really care. I turn off my notifications. I don't care how many people like it. And actually recently when it stopped showing you how many people like it, it just took that equation away. I'm like, I don't care what number. That's actually one of the best things Instagram ever did, was remove the figure so you can see how many people like it. Because that's bullshit. Who cares? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What I use it for is a digital sketchbook. Because sometimes if I'm painting a mural or if I'm away from home, I will refer to my sketch, my Instagram, and go, oh, yeah, that painting I did a year ago. Then there's other times, like with this current pandemic, I will use it to put something up to say to an imaginary audience in a gallery, the internet of the gallery, say, hey, how are you feeling? Are you all right? By the way, if you're looking for something to do, why don't you do this? Not to preach, but to say, here's an option. This is what I do when I'm feeling this. Maybe you could. And that, I think, is good. I think the internet can be good as a public notice board and say, be well, you know?
Yeah, I think the struggle that I have, even though I have all the beautiful imagery that and pictures that, you know, artists simply have, you know, I mean, just take a picture of your work desk while you're making a drawing. People will like it because it probably looks pretty beautiful. You just don't notice it because it's your workplace. But same as if you're a talented photographer with your iPhone or a smartphone in a vintage car shop, then you have great image material all the time. But for me personally, I still like the work. We both are men of many words often, so we like to be heard and read. So I sometimes write a little bit longer texts and put them under the images on Instagram, knowing that only people that are really seriously interested and are at the right moment in time on my timeline or in the timeline anyway at all will read it.
Yeah.
You know, because I think I can still express myself better with words than in an image. I can express myself much better in an artwork, but you have to decipher it first. I mean, your works, I mean, mine are rather simple in comparison to yours, you know, the depth that's in your work. I mean, all the words, all the, you know, sort of all the drawings and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure if you would have to write all this down, it would be a very long text.
It ruins it. Sometimes if I have to explain something with words, I'm a very wordy person. I love words, but I don't lean towards academic explanation. There's a great quote by Jean Cocteau who said, asking an artist to discuss his art is like asking a plant to talk about horticulture.
Yeah.
And I think another idea is that if you explain the joke, it's not funny anymore. And I think that's the same with a painting. You should just look at it, and if you get something from it, then you ask more questions. But I don't think there's a need to explain it always.
No, I'm not explaining my art or artworks, and I don't even like it when other people talk about their artworks, or if galleries talk about the art of an artist. I think for me, it's something we can establish a personal contact with. I meant writing about, you know, I don't know, right now in the situation, I'm writing about what's happening, you know, what is happening with us, what's happening with Melvin and me running the gallery, trying to establish something. I would rather write about a friend of mine who is, I know him for a very, very long time. He's probably one of the most beautiful men that I personally know.
Oh.
He does bow ties, you know, bow ties.
Yeah.
He started a couple of years ago. I met him when we both still had jobs in the internet, you know, sort of, but he is a designer and everything, but he makes bow ties. So now nobody buys bow ties. So he does probably the obvious thing for somebody who does things with fabrics. He designs masks from the standpoint that there are no beautiful masks out there. And he's like a dandy. He's like a pure dandy. He needs something that fits to a suit and to the bow ties and to these things. So I'd much rather write about him you know, saying, okay, so this is now how, I just ordered four masks actually, you know, so through his web shop. And he just does this to keep the how do you call the people who sew them together?
A tailor.
The tailors, you know, sort of to keep them busy and afloat. So these are things I'd like to talk about. And of course, I can take an image of his and say, okay, look at his Instagram.
Yeah.
It's not the story I want to tell. So that's what I need words for. Yeah, and yeah, the internet is depriving me of that.
Yeah.
In a way.
No, I agree. It's not. I'd definitely say the best things happen offline. Mm-hmm. The internet just gives you the surface, doesn't it? It's an edited sort of surface version of it. And it's very narcissistic. I think it leads to people caring too much about what other people think about them. I've done a few periods of time where I've gone offline for, I think the longest I did was 5 weeks. And then I've done other times when I'm on it all the time. Like sometimes your phone says, hey, you were on the internet for 6 hours today. I'm like, what? So I know what it's like to do both, to binge and to detox. And I would say definitely my brain felt better when I was detoxing. My state of mind and my sense of self, my self-worth, my self-esteem was way better when I wasn't on the internet. But I think it's some days are easier than others, you know? Sometimes it's important to do this, what we're doing now. You know, some days I go a whole day without talking to anyone on the phone. I actually hate FaceTime. This period of quarantine, everyone wants to FaceTime and I can't do it. It gives me a headache. This is different because we're having a one-on-one chat and we're talking about, when you're talking to a whole family or when the screen splits up and there's five people, I can't deal with it. But telephoning I can deal with. And some days I'm like, right, I've got to speak to my dad, got to speak to my auntie, got to speak to my brother. I do this list. And then the next day I'm like, I don't want to speak to anyone today. I think the answer is to maybe discipline yourself. If you're going to binge, then you've got to detox. The internet is like chocolate. If you eat chocolate in the morning and all day, you will feel sick. But chocolate is really nice late at night with a cup of tea. And I think the internet is like chocolate. I love chocolate. But if I ate it all day, my teeth would fall out and I'd get fat.
Yeah, well, very nice comparison. David.
1 hour and 3 minutes. Is that a good amount of time? Did we cover some good stuff there, man?
We covered some good stuff. We could still go on for 50 hours probably. The two of us especially, I think.
Yeah. I'm a talker, aren't I? You're a talker as well. Yeah. Do you want to meet my baby? Because she's just behind us.
Yeah, but only if she contributes to the podcast.
Lily? Yeah, we'll have to get her to make a noise. She's quite noisy.
Yeah. How does it work? Two artists together and a baby and one tiny studio? Or is it not that tiny? Well, does Lily work as well now?
Lily and I both have a studio separate to the house.
All
right. We are actually, her studio is directly above my studio. And at home, we both have a desk and we give each other space. And here we go. Look, here's Lily and here's Ziggy. You got to make a noise, Ziggy. Otherwise, you don't exist.
Just
no. Does she really exist? Is she just a figment of all of our imaginations? It's like TV on the radio, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
And for the people watching in black and white, Tottenham are playing in blue.
Ziggy's wearing yellow.
Yes. And she's a beautiful baby. She's probably the most beautiful baby I've ever seen. I might be a little bit biased, but
I think it's, you know, whatever.
I really like her. It's amazing. I didn't even know her 6 months ago. And now I think the world of her. She's amazing.
Yeah, I can understand that. But it's anyway, from this respect, it's kind of a weird podcast because my son was around.
I just saw him. I just saw the top of his head.
Yeah, he needed me to open him a bottle of just some drink. So I think the respect that I had in the beginning with these podcasts here in the house, where everybody was quiet and staying outside when I was doing, I think it's it's, you know, breaking apart. There's more rebellion now. Yeah, my wife was in here before too. Did you hear her too? She's just like, I mean, everybody's just like not taking as much care, and I kind of like it because, you know, so we kind of have to embrace this now.
Absolutely. And, chaos. Yeah. We're embracing the chaos of this situation.
Yes.
I mean, you can hear people drilling in my garden. That wasn't supposed to happen, but that's good. This is part of it, isn't it? To accept the situation and to actually enjoy the bad times. If you can enjoy the bad times and just accept how things are, then you can learn to enjoy it. Maybe. Difficult.
I think so. Mm-hmm. David, thank you for...
Hey, mate, thank you for your time. And thanks for thinking to chat to me from my little place in the world. I hope you and your family are all in wonderful health, healthy, happy, and stay strong and stay sane, because this will pass and there will be times when we are once again dancing in nightclubs with strangers. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. Goodbye, David.
All right, mate. Thanks. Lots of love. Take care. Peace.
Well, thank you for listening today. I will be back with more talks shortly. If you have any questions for me or my guests, I'm happy to hear them all. Just send me a mail to hello@heliumtalk.com or a direct message on my Instagram @heliumcowboy. Stay safe and healthy and take good care of everyone around you. Helium Talk.